I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending March 8th, 2014. Four men in northern Nigeria, which is governed by Islamic law, were forced to admit to having had gay sex and were then publicly whipped this week as punishment. They were forced to lay face down on the floor of the courtroom for the lashings. The men were convicted by a Sharia court in the state and city of Bauchi under Nigeria's draconian anti-gay law, signed by President Goodluck Jonathan in mid-January. Aside from banning civil marriages for same-gender couples, the new law enhances penalties that already existed for private, consensual, adult gay sex, outlaws advocating for LGBT rights, and even criminalizes expressions of same-gender affection in public. In addition to the 15 lashes, each man could spend a year in prison if he can't also pay a fine equivalent to about $122. Dorothy Akinova of the Coalition for the Defense of Sexual Rights Network said the men, each in his early 20s, confessed after being beaten while in police custody. She told the Associated Press that they will likely face additional violence if they're sent to prison. The trial of the four men was postponed in January after a mob of more than 2,000 people tried to stone the accused outside of the courthouse, demanding death sentences for all of them. Security forces shot into the air and used tear gas to disperse the crowd. Akinova said she got her information about the convictions and punishments from the men's families, who told her that the judge was lenient because the defendants had promised that the homosexual acts occurred in the past and that they had since changed their ways. For fear of further assaults on the courthouse, this week's hearings and whippings were unannounced and conducted in secret. The judge said the trial of another four men accused of sodomy would be heard at a later date. Dozens of perceived-to-be gay men have been arrested since mid-January in what appears to be an all-out crackdown on sexual minorities in Nigeria.
Elsewhere in Africa, two men jailed in Zambia and charged with four counts of having carnal knowledge against the order of nature were forced to undergo anal probes to prove their guilt. They're scheduled to stand trial in the coming week. Four lesbians have reportedly been arrested in Cameroon, where consensual adult same-gender sex is punishable by up to 5 years in prison. According to Human Rights Watch, Cameroon arrests and convicts more suspected gay people than any other African country. And The Advocate cites an Ugandan LGBT blog to report that a lesbian there was served with an eviction notice this week. While the landlord called her a wonderful tenant, he said she could no longer rent the home because of the country's recently enacted anti-homosexuality law. It not only imposes life in prison for repeat offenders and criminalizes advocating for LGBT rights, but calls for prison terms of up to 7 years for anyone who offers premises and fixed or movable assets for purposes of homosexuality. Meanwhile, the Anglican Bishop of Uganda is threatening to break away from the entire Church of England because he believes its leadership has become spiritually blind on the issue of homosexuality. The Ugandan Church, along with others in Africa, has already broken its ties with Anglicans in North America over their blessing of same-gender unions. And men seeking to hold official positions within the Anglican Church of Nigeria must now swear an oath before God that they are not gay or bisexual, inviting the full wrath of God if they are not telling the truth.
Ambiguity surrounds comments attributed to Roman Catholic Pope Francis this week that suggest the Church might be open to legal civil unions for same-gender couples. The Vatican's press office sent out an email hoping to clarify the matter, writing that Pope Francis did not choose to enter into debates about the delicate matter of gay civil unions, but spoke generally about the obligation of the state to fulfill its responsibilities towards its citizens. The statements are nevertheless a refreshing change from those of Francis's predecessor, Benedict XVI, who regularly railed against any legal recognition of same-gender relationships.
Exiled Tibetan Buddhist leader the Dalai Lama condemned anti-gay bullying and abuse during an interview airing this week on Larry King Now. The venerable broadcaster also asked the venerable man of faith,
"What about same-sex marriage?"
"That's up to the country's law."
"What do you feel personally about it?"
"That's okay. I think individual business."
"None of your business, right?"
If you people, two couple, really feel that way, it's more sort of also the practical and more sort of satisfaction. Both sides fully agree, then okay.
The Dalai Lama has nevertheless called same-gender sex a form of misconduct for Buddhists, although not necessarily for others.
In other news, the criminal prosecution of a transgender Lebanese woman in a relationship with a man has been thrown out by a judge who ruled that she had not broken any law. The woman was born with both sets of genitalia and was assigned a male identity at birth, but she grew up feeling that she was female and underwent gender reassignment surgery in the 1990s. Her identity papers, however, still list her as male, and Lebanese prosecutors believe that meant her relationship with the man was in breach of Article 534 of Lebanon's Penal Code, which criminalizes unnatural sexual intercourse. The decision was issued in January, but was only made public this week in the latest edition of the quarterly Lebanese journal, The Legal Agenda. Lebanon's leading LGBT rights group, Helem, applauded the ruling. Co-founder Georges Azzi told the Lebanese English language Daily Star that it's a big step. It shows we're moving in the right direction. He said he hoped it would discourage authorities from continuing to use Article 534 to persecute gay and transgender people in Lebanon.
A gay male couple got married in a lavish public ceremony that they say was the first of its kind in the conservative Southeast Asian nation of Myanmar, also known as Burma. Tin Ko Ko and Myo Min Tet wore matching traditional Myanmar clothing and garlands of jasmine in the ceremony at an upscale hotel in Rangoon. Mirroring traditional Burmese weddings, the two men arrived in a solemn procession followed by six groomsmen before a crowd of about 200 guests who applauded as the couple kissed after cutting a red heart-shaped cake. The men both work for human rights groups and have lived together as a couple for 10 years. In fact, they said, the wedding actually marked their 10-year anniversary. Same-gender sex is criminalized under Myanmar's colonial-era penal code. While it's rarely enforced, activists say the law encourages harassment and discrimination against LGBT people.
There were several developments this week in the increasingly worldwide movement for marriage equality in the United States. Democratic Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper publicly announced his support for opening civil marriage to same-gender couples in the state, although it came in the form of a written statement toward the bottom of a press release from the LGBT group One Colorado, announcing its new equality campaign called Why Marriage Matters Colorado. If all men and women truly have the inalienable right to pursue happiness, and if all people are created equal, the governor's statement read, then by extension of law, logic, and love, every adult couple should also have the freedom to join in marriage. Meanwhile, Wyoming and Indiana became the latest states to be targeted with marriage equality lawsuits by same-gender couples. And a ruling is expected later this month in a federal marriage equality case in Michigan.
Lesbian and gay couples in other parts of Illinois began walking down the aisle along with their Chicago counterparts this week. State officials cited last month's federal court ruling involving only Cook County that there was no legal reason to wait until June 1st, the date that the Illinois marriage equality law was to have taken effect. Attorney General Lisa Madigan said that the protections guaranteed by the Constitution must exist without regard to county lines. Governor Pat Quinn urged every county clerk in Illinois to quickly follow Madigan's guidance. However, the Associated Press reported that some county clerks in central and western Illinois have said they'll continue to wait until June 1st to start issuing marriage licenses to same-gender couples.
And finally, Kentucky's Attorney General Jack Conway was unable to conceal his emotions this week while announcing that he cannot, in good conscience, appeal a February federal court ruling that ordered Kentucky to recognize the marriages of same-gender couples legally performed in other states.
In the end, this issue is really larger than any single person. It's about placing people over politics. For those who disagree, I can only say that I'm doing what I think is right. In the final analysis, I had to make a decision I could be proud of. For me now, and for my daughter's judgment in the future.
But Governor and fellow Democrat Steve Beshear soon thereafter said he felt duty-bound to defend state law. His office issued what was essentially a request for bids to outside attorneys willing to defend Kentucky's refusal to recognize legal same-gender unions. Judge John Hayborn has stayed implementation of his federal order until March 20th. Stay tuned.
That's News Wrap for the week ending March 8th, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
We'll have tea with some queens and hear the pronouncements of a king later in the program. Activists from around the world are not taking Africa's epidemic of homophobic laws sitting down. A global day of action to protest Nigeria's new law was held on March 7th in cities including Stockholm, Brussels, Washington, D.C., and London. LGBT Africans and their allies in New York City demonstrated in front of the Nigerian embassy, where they encouraged more people in the U.S. to take a stronger stand. Some of the protesters were arrested. Journalist Kelly Cogswell and filmmaker Harriet Hirshhorn shared this on-scene report.
What do we want?
Justice!
When do we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
Justice!
That was the chant of a couple hundred protesters who gathered Friday near the Nigerian embassy in New York. Their target, the new laws that criminalize LGBT people and anybody who dares help them. These laws have led to recent outbreaks of anti-gay violence in cities across Nigeria, with people being attacked by mobs and violently beaten.
People are scared to come out of their houses. People are afraid to walk the streets. They were already underground to begin with, and now it's even worse.
Well, I think it sends a terrible message that it is okay to harass, intimidate, assault, or even kill or torture someone based on their sexual orientation, because the law authorizes it now that it is illegal.
A handful of protesters made their way across the street to the Nigerian embassy, where they blocked the doorway for several minutes before being arrested. They were members of ACT UP and Housing Works, an organization that continues to provide housing to people with HIV/AIDS. Housing Works is seeing more and more LGBT people fleeing anti-gay violence. They arrive in the U.S. feeling hurt and bewildered at how their countries and their family and friends have made them outcasts. One of the speakers at the demo was Adejoke Tubiele, a Nigerian-American who was born in the U.S. but grew up in Africa.
The anti-sodomy laws that you see throughout Africa right now started with the missionaries when they first came to Africa in the late 1800s after the Berlin Conference. This idea that, oh, homosexuality is Western, homophobia is what's been imported to Africa. These Christian churches from America who have been going to Uganda and Nigeria preaching hate, you know, this is not fair. And America has some responsibility, and we want them to say something and do something about it.
Reporting for This Way Out in New York, this is Harriet Hirshhorn and Kelly Cogswell.
I'm a little tired of the weary throwaway line that there is no such thing as the gay sensibility. Of course there is such a thing as the gay sensibility. Of course gay men and women think in some fundamental ways differently from straights. It is not just about what we do in bed. It is about the echoes in the culture of who we are or who we aren't. Hi, I'm Clive Barker. Listen to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian news magazine.
Still to come, satirist Stephen Colbert suggests to whom you can send your queer credentials. But first, Drag is just not what it used to be, at least not in Vancouver, British Columbia. The resurgence of this evolving art form has forged strong bonds between the performers and their community and reminded many of its importance. Professional drag performers Jaylene Time, Stephen Carty, and Anthony Casey are featured in a documentary by Zach Singer and Deborah Power that pulls back the curtain for a look at a world that may be unfamiliar. It's called Behind the Queens.
Are y'all ready? Play my theme music!
My drag persona is Jaylene Time.
Hi everyone, I'm Ray Motherfucking Sunshine.
I am Chandelier, East Van's favorite tipsy aunt at a wedding.
Drag comes from Shakespeare. So-and-so dressed as girl. Women weren't allowed in the opera, so men would do the woman roles and they'd be dressed in drag.
You know, I've done musical theater, so I love to entertain people. I was that kid who, you know, when his parents would have people over, I'd be putting on puppet shows or I'd be dancing or singing. There's that aspect of it. I also really love that it's connects me to the community.
This is where I realized myself as an artist, and it was an opportunity for me to really express who I really was, but I didn't know that at the time. So I was expressing myself through the art of transformation of textures, of lighting, of makeup, of glitter. Very quickly, I had a strong presence in it.
When people talk about drag, I don't see it as having either a gender or what people would call a race or a skin color. I think drag is just drag. It's playing on whoever you want to be. So there's no labels for drag.
The fact that I'm a drag performer and I identify as a transgender woman are two separate things. It just happens to be my flow of my experience.
Well, there's regular drag. Then there's bio queens who do the same thing, but they just happen to be women. There's, you get somebody like Eddie Izzard, and he's a man who just happens to like dressing up in women's clothing. And then you can get gender fuck, which I love to do sometimes. And I put on the drag queen makeup, but I wear boy clothes and use my boy hair, and super fun.
There's nothing wrong with loving who you are, she said, 'cause he made you perfect, babe.
Two-spirit is a term used to describe a First Nations person that houses feminine and masculine energies in the same body. It used to be a really revered role in the First Nations community because it was somebody that could be a mother and could also be a father and do the duties that needed to support a family. But then it turned into the point to where these are the people that were being abused.
If I could turn.
Drag queens have this inherent maternal instinct when they see a young gay man who's not sure of himself. Like, we have to go and welcome him. Like, make sure he's having a good time.
When they come to the gay community, that becomes a family. So you meet people that fit into the roles of a maternal instinct or a paternal sisters. Just people to kind of really help you feel like you're not alone.
Usually when you start out, there's one or two other girls who are first starting. And so you kind of pair together and you compare notes and sharing these experiences, like first time on stage. All of these things really brings you like very close together very quickly. So it's very easy to call somebody your sister and mean it.
Not every drag queen has a drag mom or a drag family, but it's kind of like in all the drag queens are kind of sisters. Like, yes, we fight, but we're all together with the same cause of either doing awareness or charity fundraising. So we can put aside personal differences and band together for certain causes.
If I knew you'd all cheer for taking my clothes off, I would have done it earlier. All right.
When you step out in your your house in full drag and you're going to a show, you can't just walk into a bar and not say hi to anyone and just go straight to the back room. You have a responsibility to go say hi to people that may be wanting to approach you. It's okay to come talk to me and take a photo with me. I'm totally okay with that. And if you have questions, you can talk to me.
I think everybody wants to be accepted, you know, for who they are. I think everybody, you know, doesn't want to worry about being beaten when they leave their home because of ignorance.
I didn't think it became entertainment first. I think it became as a way to kind of speak out against political movements.
Drag queens have always been at the fore of most of the large-scale movements in the gay community. We wouldn't really have had Stonewall. We would have, but it makes sense that a drag queen was there and threw the first rock, or as legend says.
Drag is now evolving from what it used to be for standing up and doing charity rites and everything into more of a... like a pseudo-celebrity kind of style of a thing.
There's definitely a new drag. The old days, very pageant, very old-school Hollywood. You are painted to look like a woman. You're trying to pass. It's blurred now, and I think it's because of attitudes towards gender and sexuality.
You think it would be just black and white, and this is what you are, and this is what you are. But... it's really not. You may see me as one thing, but just like everybody, if we got to get to know each other better, and you'd be amazed at what you'll find out there.
I'ma take that bitch to college. I'ma give that bitch some knowledge. Understand that you're
throwing shade is intelligently insulting somebody. You have to be clever, you have to be quick on your feet, you have to have a wit about you. So you start off with throwing some shade, and then someone shades you back, and then you keep going, and then it gets a little more vicious, so you're starting to read them. So it's this back and forth exchange. I mean, a good read is just, like, captivating to watch, because it happens so fast.
The first thing I'm gonna do is go on stage, look at everybody, and say, thanks for paying my rent, bitches!
I don't want to be... someone that's 85 and still trying to drag. I think what will happen, there'll be a certain point in my life where I'll be like, hey, that's it.
I mean, if Shanda's gonna grow with me, she's already about 53, so she's gonna be ancient by the time I'm 40 and doing drag.
You can have any life that you want. It really is. It's within your grasp. So it's just making the appropriate decisions and surrounding yourself with the people that really contribute to that. People that want to see you succeed.
I mean, it's charity when people come see a drag queen perform, but we do definitely give back. And I think everybody has that, you know, intrinsically within them.
I have a huge respect for the drag community because at that moment, these are the people that allowed me to really find out who I was and have a laugh at while doing it.
You can be a drag queen and you can walk up to anyone and go, hey, how's it going? That right there can mean the world to somebody.
I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm not humble, but I'm doing a good act, you know? Good, I'm good at. Oh, my darling. My precious angels at the phone call. Thank you for coming.
Drag artists Chandelier, Jaylene Time, and Ray Sunshine perform regularly in Vancouver, British Columbia. Behind the Queens was produced by Deborah Power and Zach Singer. They're planning to release a film version in a few weeks. Keep in touch with the project via their website, behindthequeens.org. But wait, there's more! Far-right Iowa Republican Congressman Steve King is no stranger to outrageous theories. His comments on Arizona's vetoed religious freedom bill got a thinkiness review from Comedy Central's Stephen Colbert.
It's clear in the civil rights section of the code that, you can't discriminate against people based upon, I'm not sure I've got the list right, but race, creed, religion, color of skin, those kind of things. And there's nothing mentioned in there on self-professed behavior. The one thing that that I reference when I say self-professed is, how do you know who to discriminate against? I about have to tell you. And, you know, are they then setting up a case? And is this about bringing a grievance, or is it actually about a service that they'd like to have?
Steve King is right. These self-professed gays just want you to refuse them service so they can sue you.
If it's not specifically protected in the Constitution, then it's got to be an immutable characteristic. That being a characteristic that can be independently verified and can't be willfully changed.
Yes, the only way for gays to be protected is have their gayness independently verified. So I think what Steve King is saying, gays, is he wants you to send photos and or videos proving to Steve King that you are gay. Again, that's Steve King, 2210 Rayburn Office Building, Washington, D.C., 20515. Be sure to label your envelope campaign contributions so you know that he'll read it.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Tanya Kane Perry, Christopher Gall, Kelly Cogswell and Harriet Hirshhorn, and Zach Singer and Deborah Power contributed program material. Thanks also to Steve Pride and Frida Worden. Cheap Trick performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by a grant from the Ivana Foundation and by the generosity of our listeners. Do you want program and subscription information or a look at the transcript of NewsWrap? You can find all that, mugshots of the crew, and more at thiswayout.org. You'll also find links to our podcasts, Facebook, and Google Plus pages. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WZKW, Kingsville, Ohio, KUCR, Riverside, California, 4CCC, Warwick, Queensland, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
There's something out there.
For listening to Out Loud, you just heard a few instrumentals from some queer hip-hop artists such as Leaf, Azalea Banks, FKA Twigs. We heard some Lone. That last song was Young Witch. And up next we have some Burial to close the hour. Thank you.
The time is 7:01. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Hard Knock Radio is next.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
It's history. Never been done before. Never been done in this country.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another edition. It is Hard Knock Radio. Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon. On today's show, we pay tribute to the one and only Frankie Knuckles, legendary house producer who passed away yesterday. Later on, we're going to be talking about the upcoming Latino Summit, and we're going to conclude our show with a conversation about the Universal Zulu Nation as we feature local artists talking about the Meeting of the Minds gathering they're having on Thursday. All that and more coming up after the afternoon headlines.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. A monster out to maul federal workers. That's how American Federation of Government Employees President David Cox Sr. describes the latest budget proposal from Republican Wisconsin Representative Paul Ryan. Cox called the budget an insatiable monster, not content with the $138 billion it's already extracted from federal workers through pay freezes and other cuts. Cox calls Ryan's new budget morally repulsive and intellectually dishonest. Ryan's budget would require more money from federal worker take-home pay to be diverted to their pensions, amounting to a 6% cut in take-home pay. It would also take money out of the federal retirement system and put it into a 401k-style plan. There are other unspecified cuts to federal employee pay and benefits as well. The Ryan budget would cut $5.1 trillion from the federal budget over 10 years. Two women who say they were McDonald's managers for years are saying that they participated in wage theft from McDonald's workers, and it was systematic. In a video posted on YouTube, Kwanzaa Brooks said in part,
I think the worst thing that I was ever asked to do would be to really adjust a person's time. That is the worst, because they did the work. They were there, and they deserve to get paid for what they did. It's a job. It's not right. It's not fair.
Lakia Williams says she was a McDonald's manager for years as well, and she describes how managers stole wages from workers.
On several occasions, had employees come and work either before their shift or either stay after their shift. I've had employees literally clock out to work because they were either going into overtime or labor was getting extremely high, and we had to balance it.
A national poll of fast food workers shows 89% of them report having wages illegally taken from them. The Hart Research poll surveyed 1,008 fast food workers in 10 cities. The China Labor Bulletin says Walmart workers in Changde are standing firm on their demand for a doubling of compensation offered by Walmart as the store there closes. Walmart has made a lesser offer, and it's trying to get workers to accept that. But the Changde Walmart trade union is urging the workers to stand firm and not be tempted by unripe fruit. The Chinese Walmart workers demanded collective bargaining with the Chinese Walmart store after management announced March 4th that the store was closing. When the closing was announced, the workers were told to accept layoffs or move to another store, but they organized to demand compensation for the closing.
Workers Independent News is proud to be heard on The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. Live nationwide weekdays, noon to 3 p.m. at theunionedge.com.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org. Rip.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What's really going on? This is Boost from the Coup with Hard Knock Radio. You gotta be there.
What up, y'all? It's Aya Sage, a.k.a. Rocky Rivera, and you're listening to Hard Knock Radio. News, views, hip-hop.
DVD hanging out with you, and I wanted to kick things off with a song called The Whistle Song from somebody who is a transformative figure, somebody who changed the way that music is done. He is a pioneer in an industry that is multi-billion dollars in the making. We're talking about house music, now